Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast, featuring me, Mike Calvin, Dominic Fifield of The Athletic, and his colleague, Richard Amofa. Imagine not liking football. The final day of the Premier League season was an emotional tornado. It ended in Manchester City's fourth title in 5 years, and with Pep Guardiola in tears. Billions might have been invested in the City project, but the character to come back to win from two goals down with 15 minutes remaining and fate apparently favouring Liverpool. Well, Dom, that's priceless, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, it is. I mean, the drama of those 5 minutes, a little over 5 minutes.
5 minutes, 36 seconds, I'm told. Is that right?
Well, there you go. I mean, it's, it was staggering. I mean, I don't want to say with the benefit of hindsight, but you just felt that if City scored one, then the momentum would switch again and that maybe something remarkable might happen. You know, 5 minutes, 36 seconds is freakishly quick for a team to rally and overturn a two-goal deficit. But in a strange way, Liverpool were never top yesterday, despite it all. But they had the momentum at some point. There was an inevitability about them going ahead against Wolves, and the pressure at the Etihad, at City. Everybody was aware of it. You could see that Pep Guardiola was wearing it on his brow. I mean, it was getting to everybody. For them to pluck a revival like they did out of that pressure was quite something. And yeah, and it does say everything about character. It says everything about quality as well, though. I mean, you can just put players of that caliber onto the pitch and they can make that difference. Because everybody talked about Gundogan's impact, but I mean, Sterling for the first goal was magnificent as well, eking that space out and putting the perfect crossover. And Zinchenko was instrumental as well after his halftime introduction. They have that depth of quality, but I mean, to whip up that amount of drama was just unbelievable, and testament to the quality pedigree and class that they have.
Yeah, 93 points, 99 goals. So, Rich, are they the sort of standards that you need to reach these days to actually win a title?
I think it is, yeah. Because I mean, if you're looking at their closest competitors, you know, right behind them, all the way and being pushed all the way. And having that level of consistency, it's only going to push you to higher grades and higher levels. But another figure I'd like to point out, or two if I may, you know, 26 goals conceded. So if you look at a goal difference of 73, you know, that just gives you that extra leverage. You know, where the margins are so fine and so tight. Their defence this season has been fantastic. And, you know, just looking at, obviously, you know, the way they play, the way they keep the ball, you know, they have the ball, the opposition can't score. And as you say, 26 goals conceded, building up that goal difference did give them that extra leverage. But I think a word Dom used at the top was inevitability. And you say it was inevitable that Liverpool would come back. And I think a lot of people watching, although we, you know, the drama was fantastic, I think there was a sense of when City did get one, you probably were expecting them to get two, to get three and go on and win the game and ultimately the title. So, I mean, it's fantastic to watch, you know, the level of consistency and the quality all the way right into the end. Say both sides have been fantastic this season and, you know, City have just been able to edge it.
Yeah, it's probably a bit too soon to actually look at this in its fullest perspective, Dom. But, you know, we're talking about 6 City title wins in 10 years. We all remember the, you know, the psychodrama of 2012. Where does this season rate in that sort of pantheon of achievement?
Well, that I mean, 2012 was the first, and that was sort of breaking the seal almost, and allowing City to believe that they were a club capable of competing for Premier League titles. Slightly different now, 4 and 5 years. Yes, dramatic. I mean, it was very similar to 2018-19, wasn't it? I mean, we're talking that finer margin again between the top two. Part of me wonders, I mean, it's clearly taken its toll on Pep Guardiola, and the emotion that he showed at the final whistle was somebody that had been properly stressed by the pressure that Liverpool were putting on his team. And he sort of created this siege mentality over recent weeks as well, sort of, you know, the world's out to get us, everybody's against us, everybody wants Liverpool to win the title, which it's patently untrue, but it sort of suggests to me that's what the most successful clubs need. Maybe that's what Manchester United had under Sir Alex Ferguson, this sort of acceptance that the majority out there, basically everybody out there isn't a fan of their club, is going to want them to slip up, because that sort of regularity of success and when you're winning every year pretty much, yeah, it builds up an animosity amongst rival supporters that maybe wasn't there before. There used to be a certain amount of sympathy for City fans, not so much now. But maybe that's taken its toll, and that seemed to make this achievement even better in Pep Guardiola's eyes. That, coupled with the sheer calibre and quality of the opponent they're up against. I mean, Liverpool just get better and better as each year as well. This year, last year, obviously a bit of a blip, but I think there was so much freakish about last year behind closed doors, etc. This was more the Liverpool that we'd expected from the years before, and Klopp has built up to this, and they are challenging City, and that's no mean feat. And it's clearly putting pressure on Pep Guardiola, hence his breakdown at the final whistle.
You know, it certainly comes to something when you've got Manchester United fans desperate for Manchester City to win a title. You know, given all that, and that parallel that actually was drawn by Guardiola himself between his City and Sir Alex Ferguson's Manchester United, do you see any similarities there, Rich?
I think drawing on that that siege mentality, I think it's a really important point, because, you know, if you are so consistent and you are winning games and you are blowing sides away, sometimes, I mean, we know Pep Guardiola sets really high standards, and I'm not saying that complacency we would ever set in, because it wouldn't and it hadn't. But just having that extra edge, I think it just helped to push over the line, because it's not something that we've really heard Pep Guardiola speak about in the past and talk about being outsiders and everybody supports Liverpool. So the way he kind of dropped that in, at the point he dropped it in the season, it just added that extra impetus, didn't it? Well, I feel anyway, just to give them that extra drive, that extra edge to progress. And I guess the other similarities, I guess, would be that inevitability. You just know that they're just going to score. you know, West Ham, when they went 2-0 down, the fact, you know, they were able to come back. I mean, I guess we all expect them to go and win the game when Mahrez had that penalty. But I think in the back of our minds, I think we all expected City to come back. There's an inevitability there. And now, I guess, as you say, with 4 leagues and 5 seasons, you have that chokehold over the Premier League. I mean, of course, Liverpool are willing competitors and have driven them very close over the past couple of years. But now, as you say, 6 in 10 years, 4 in 5 years, I mean, it is Manchester City's Premier League. And I don't think that can be argued with. So, but I think that those 3 points really do kind of shed a light on that kind of similarity, for sure.
Yeah, unless we forget, and I'm sure people in Liverpool won't. Well, let us forget, City will be watching Liverpool in the Champions League final in Paris on Saturday. Guardiola made the point that the Premier League title is the most satisfying to win simply because it's the most difficult. Do you agree with that, Dom?
I'm happy Dom's had that question.
I mean, I want to say he would say that, but I mean, look, it's... I think when you're playing 38 games across a season and you're up against an opponent like Liverpool, who are as relentless as you are, and who don't lose games. Disaster at Liverpool is a draw. And City are along the same mentality, don't get me wrong, that they won more games in the end, didn't they? But it's I think when you're being pushed every week and the level of pressure involved in that, maybe that does make it tougher to win. You can get freak results. I mean, I don't think many people think that Real Madrid, for example, are necessarily one of the top two teams in Europe, but they're in the Champions League final. Chelsea probably weren't the top team in Europe last season, but they won the Champions League and they ended up actually winning the Club World Cup as well. So they're world champions now. It's that sort of, well, it's a cup competition. It's the jeopardy that comes with a cup and with a draw and who you get and the drama of an individual match that might be swayed by sending off by an uncharacteristic error. And I suppose that there will always be that, and in terms of the Champions League, and even perhaps that will become less of an issue as UEFA turn it inevitably into a league competition, you know, with each revamp of their competition. But I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult one to say. I mean, Pep would say that because he's held off the challenge that mounted by Liverpool this season and to win the Premier League, and it is satisfying for him. But I think underneath it all, he would be desperate to win a Champions League with Manchester City. I mean, that in many ways, actually, what happened at the Bernabeu scarred City, and it's no surprise that all that siege mentality stuff came out of that event. You know, that's when they suddenly realised they had to rally round somewhere, because that was an uncharacteristic failure.
Mm. And, you know, lest we forget, again, they're going to be stronger next season, aren't they, Rich?
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it? Because, I mean, all the talk is about, you know, City don't play with a recognised striker and this and that, yet, as you say, they still scored 99 goals this season. And, you know, Haaland's only going to, as you say, make them stronger, especially, the final ball and the quality of the final ball. You know, he's going to be on hand to put those chances away. So with his addition there, yes, you would expect them to be stronger. And in those games, as they say, you talk about the Champions League and those fine margins, you know, talk about Real Madrid and when City had the two chances right at the end, Rafael Mahrez went close as well. You're thinking, okay, maybe Haaland is there to put those chances away and be the difference in those games. So I think you'd have to look at City as potential favourites next season with Haaland up top. And it'd be interesting to see where they go, because, of course, Fernandinho is obviously heading off. Likely that Ilkay Gundogan will be heading away too. So they probably would need some reinforcements there. I mean, they've been quite unfortunate with injuries also, especially at the back. So maybe another reinforcement there too. So it would be interesting to see how they act and how they play this summer. But you can't deny they're going to be so much stronger with Haaland up front next year.
Yeah, I found it quite amusing that over the last couple of weeks, people have been talking about, you know, the relative thinness of City's squad. I'm not sure what planet those people were on, but there we are. I suppose also, you know, you mentioned the Champions League changes, Dom. We're in now an accelerated evolution of the game, aren't we? State-run clubs or state-funded clubs, sovereign wealth-funded clubs, have an inherent advantage. Now, you've only got to look at PSG and that obscene Mbappe deal to see that the game is changing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It has been for a while, and we get little reminders like the Mbappe situation, and the old guard are sort of fighting desperately to retain their power in this new environment, this new landscape. Hence the sense of outrage, I suspect, at Real Madrid over the Mbappe snub. But, you know, this weekend, Real Madrid can go out there and remind the world how they are the establishment, how they are the team that wins the Champions League more years than not, almost. I mean, it has that sense about it, doesn't it? Real Madrid in Champions League finals. And actually, it's nice in some ways that you've got Liverpool versus Real Madrid in that game, because you've got two of the most decorated European Cup teams out there competing in that. And you know, they will remain significant and powerful. But they've got challenges now. They've got small states challenging them and throwing money at things. And that will make life interesting at that level.
Yeah, certainly. Well, what do you think, you know, the rest, and even when I'm saying the rest, I'm probably talking about, say, another four or five clubs in England. What do you think they can learn from Liverpool's approach, Rich?
I think when you're looking at, you know, as you say, there's so much at stake, isn't there? So it's, you know, it's apparent. We've seen clubs try and go for the quick fix, for the, you know, win at all costs mentality, especially at the start, and we've seen it implode. But as you've seen in Liverpool, you know, they've built slowly. You know, it's well documented the slow start that Jurgen Klopp had at Liverpool, and he's ultimately built that squad with the support of, you know, a very talented board and very talented people behind the scenes, so like Michael Edwards, etc. And as you say, they've built this powerhouse over a number of years, and now what we're seeing now is just little tweaks to the armoury. So, you know, as you say, they big powerhouse, and they went and, you know, bought Thiago. And just, you know, to almost kind of, you know, tweak the way they play and try and control games and then keep the ball better, bringing in the likes of Luis Diaz in January, who's had a transformative effect. I mean, I don't think I've seen a player join the league in January and have that much of an impact. So I think clubs can definitely take a leaf out of their book in terms of that. But the issue is, with so much at stake, as I say, will they be afforded time to, you know, implement that style, implement, you know, the way of football, their ethos, and take things forward? It's unlikely. And we've seen clubs try to do it. And as we know, the owners and boards, you know, they lose patience very, very, very quickly. So, you know, say, obviously, I'm living in a utopian world where we say managers should be given time, etc. But I think that's just the way forward if they want to try and build something.
Yeah, well, patience and perspective, you know, two pretty valuable attributes, aren't they, really, when you're looking at the development of a club or an institution. Now, it seems to me, Dom, and I don't know if you agree, that if you look at their, you drill right down into it, you're talking about, you know, an inspirational manager, intelligent, sensitive, you know, emotionally driven, like probably like the football club he has taken over. You've got time given to players to bed in. You know, if you look at Keita as a good example, even Minamino has had a, you know, a bit part role, but he's scored important goals. You've also had, as Rich said there, that successful decisiveness in the market with Luis Diaz. You know, as a whole, they've got so much going for them, but there is one central weakness, and that's probably going to be exposed in the next couple of weeks when Real Madrid are inevitably going to come in and try and get Mo Salah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose now that Mbappe's not going there, that would be something that...
Because they've got a safe face, haven't they, Don?
Well, yeah, and they need a coup. And obviously, Mo Salah's always wanted to play with Tony Rudiger. I mean, look, it's you're right. They that's what Real Madrid do. They won't take that snub from Mbappe well. They'll want to go out there, save face. They'll want to go out and make a splash in the market and show that they are still right up there at the pinnacle, competing with the small, oil-rich, state-funded clubs. So, yeah, that is a struggle. But then Liverpool knew this situation was coming, and Mo Salah's contract situation has rumbled on for ages. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily inevitable that he goes. I mean, of all clubs as well, Real Madrid, there's a history there. And, you know, all the stuff that he's come out with since the final was lined up, talking of revenge, etc., for what happened with the shoulder injury back in the final. I mean, in 20, was it 2019?
2018,
that was it. I mean, it's not necessarily a natural marriage, that. So, but Liverpool will have to go out and show their commitment to him and convince him to sign a new contract with them, really. I mean, that's the bottom line. I the other thing about that is, okay, we will probably paint Real Madrid taking Mo Salah, if indeed that's what happens, as a massive blow for Liverpool and a huge coup for Real Madrid. But of all the clubs out there, I suspect that Liverpool already have a plan in place for what they would do if that happens. I mean, they are that well organised. They have a strength in depth already up there. I know they're losing Divock Origi, who's been a fringe player, and in, you know, Salah going would take a lot of goals out of that team. He's been a regular starter. But it wouldn't surprise me if they had people lined up to say, in this situation, if this scenario comes to pass, we're just going to go out and do that and make sure that happens. And then we've got our replacements all lined up. They're that organised. And that's really part of their strategy over the last few years. That recruitment has set them apart. The contrast, maybe not with Manchester City, but do the contrast with Manchester United. Similar amounts of money spent, probably. United probably spent more, actually. And it's just been chalk and cheese in terms of what they've delivered.
Well, talking of Manchester United, and I suppose we must, an absolutely dismal season came to an appropriately dismal end at Crystal Palace yesterday. And I'm not dissing Palace there, Dom, I promise. When you think of it, Erik ten Hag was there at Selhurst Park. I'm sure he wasn't surprised, but he must have been horrified by what he saw.
Yeah, I think, as you say, the problems have been well documented, but to see it in the flesh and just, how flat and the lack of unity and organisation and just everything that's just been wrong with Manchester United season was just laid bare at Selhurst Park. And yeah, I think that's why he's wanted to start early, because he knows he's got a huge job in his hands. There's just a myriad of issues which, as I say, we've all spoken about on a number of occasions. But we talk about making an impact. Of course, not to contradict myself to say that we shouldn't be given time, but he would also be expected to start fast and hit the ground running. He's got a pre-season now to really try and bed in his ideas. As you say, squad clearly needs reinforcements. So, they need to work hard at that. I mean, he's got his backroom staff agreed this morning with Steve McLaren and Mitchell van der Gaag there too. So the things are in place now. The ball's rolling. So now he just needs to get his ideas in place. The players he doesn't want, try and clear them out quickly. So by the time pre-season starts, you've got, your core nucleus. And then if you need to add to it, you try and get your signings done quickly. You don't want any ongoing sagas, long extended sagas over certain players. You want to get your squad there. You want to get your team set and up and running for the next campaign, because all eyes will be on Manchester United once again. How considering how far they've fallen this season, the stage is there for them to claw back. And I'm not saying they haven't got the potential to do that, but they need to hit the ground running.
Yeah, I suppose Ralf Rangnick talked about maybe needing up to 10 players. Well, that's unrealistic to do that all in one hit, isn't it, Dom?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a 2 or 3 window job and an evolution, really. Not so much. I mean, you can go out and buy 10 players, and Manchester United could go out and buy 10 players because they've probably got the finances to do it. However, clearing the books will be tricky. I don't think that's necessarily going to be an easy situation to get rid of people who, let's face it, their reputations have taken a battering over the last 18 months. They've been so flat, as Rich says, and it's just been such a miserable season that, convincing other clubs to take these damaged goods is going to be tricky. And they're all massive money as well, a lot of them. So, maybe they're going to have to be clever with some of their sales in terms of the deals that they strike to get people off the books. And I mean, it may well be there's it needs a bit of a rush of outs and a few ins coming out in this summer, and then looking to midwinter, when it's never easy, but you might be able to get someone midwinter, and then next summer again. He has to have time here, actually, to reshape this squad, because they just had a pretty much almost a decade of constant failure by their standards.
Yeah, sure. And I suppose, we need to speak of the type of player. Right at the start of the show, I talked about City's character. They need players, don't they, Rich, of the appropriate hunger and potential. I'm thinking, building around someone of the character and the quality of Declan Rice, for instance. That's the sort of people that they need to get, rather than the big stellar talent, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think, as you say, you need characters, don't you? You need people who can help drive the team on. And obviously, Rice has done that at West Ham. Of course, but to say West Ham aren't a big club, they are a big club. But we know Manchester United is a different beast altogether, the scrutiny, the pressure that comes with it. But someone to have that personality to galvanise a squad. And as you say, that when they do their recruitment this summer, Manchester United, it'll be really important and interesting to see how they go about it in terms of maybe, you know, the background checks they do and the character references that they get in. Because it's having, you know, it's been well documented this season, the dressing room issues and the leaks and the squabbles and the infighting and things like that. So the characters that they bring in is going to be really important. And I also feel as well, you know, bringing through some of the youngsters. I mean, a lot's been spoken about, you know, Hannibal Medbery, for example, and Garnacho and players like that. It'll be great to see them given more opportunities next season. I guess we'll see them more in the Europa League. But as we all know, you know, young players coming through does really help to build that affinity between the club and the players and the fans. So I think the combination of the two would be really good to see. But you all, I know it's cliche to say it, but you, as fans, all they want to see is players just competing and fighting for the shirt, and just not seen enough of that this season.
Mm. What about Chelsea, Dom? It's a club you know obviously very well. Do you sense there's a bit of a rebuild coming there?
Yeah, there has to be. To lose definitely two key defenders in Rudiger and Christensen, and potentially says Azpilicueta as well, that they have to rebuild in that respect. But I think there's also a sense that if you look back at the great Chelsea team, it was a great Chelsea team that was sort of built largely under Mourinho, and really up to the moment they won the European Cup in 2012, that was a team of winners. That was a team of big personalities, guys who didn't accept finishing second. A lot of this Chelsea squad are nearly men. I mean, they're very, very good players. Don't get me wrong. They're excellent. But I think this season has sort of summed it up. Okay, they won the Champions League last year, which was an outstanding achievement, absolutely outstanding achievement. Maybe that contradicts everything I'm saying, but the reality is, domestically, they've not really been in contention for a Premier League title since 2017. They're constantly runners-up in major cup competitions. I mean, twice this season. It's fine margins. I could have been saying something completely different if the penalties had gone slightly differently, but they didn't. And, you know, three successive FA Cup final defeats now, the first club ever to endure that. I think there's just a sense that they need an injection of their personality again. We're going back to that word again, personality, charisma, someone who's they're just not going to put up with it. Thomas Tuchel is probably of that ilk. He won't put up with being second best all the time. He will push and push. But at the moment, he's still got his hands tied. I mean, the whole club have got their hands tied. They're in the process of the takeover going through. They're not able to make signings or sanction sales. So they will come at this very, very late, actually. They'll come at it behind 19 other Premier League clubs in terms of when they get their business done. And that will make life difficult for them. So again, maybe it's going to have to be a slow burner. Maybe it's going to have to be, we're going to have a bit of patience of the new owners, see how they want to run the club. Tuchel's going to have a bit of patience in terms of the signings that come in and how they bed in. And it may just be a process that we don't see the best of for a while.
I found it really interesting, you know, looking at Thomas Tuchel's comments about N'Golo Kante. You know, basically painted him as Superman. He might as well have put an S on his chest. You know, that plays into contract negotiations. With recruitment, Chelsea has always been a bit of a distinctive model, hasn't it, Rich, with, you know, Marina Granovskaya playing a big role in it. Does that need to evolve as well, do you think?
I think so. I think as we've seen, I think, you know, in football, things need to, you always need to evolve, you know, in order to kind of stay at the top, isn't it? Because if things run stale, you know, you see stagnation. I think kind of Sky's done a decent job in terms of the recruitment of certain players and things like that. But as Dom said, though, you know, I guess their hands are tied by the situation that they are in. I mean, it's great that we're seeing, you know, I guess, you know, young players progressing over the last couple of years, and you know, the likes of Reece James now is a phenomenal right back, you know, Mason Mount, cornerstone of the side. But as you say, it's intriguing to see how they do act this summer. As you say, with all the restrictions on them, it's really difficult to tell in which direction that they're going to go in. So, Well, as I said at the top, though, evolution is key, and you have to keep evolving, you have to keep developing. And that's why I thought that the sign of Lukaku last summer was really interesting, because I think getting that ready-made forward, everyone thought, you know, he's going to be the one to take them to that next level. And for some one reason or not, it's not succeeded as much as what they thought. I mean, of course, you know, still top scorer this season, and you know, you can point to that. But, so, you know, it hasn't been a full success yet. But as we say, another summer, you know, he can get himself fitter, get himself stronger. He's had a few injury issues this season, and really kind of embed himself within the squad. And we might see a different beast next season. So you say it's really interesting to see, because they are on a bit of a cliff edge, really. And when the restrictions are lifted and they can make sign-ins, it'll be interesting to see the direction that they take.
They are the great unknowns in the Premier League at the moment in terms of the contenders, because we just don't know what the Bowley Clear Lake group are going to do in their ownership. What type of model are they going to pursue? Is it going to be FSG? Is it going to be Abramovich? Similar, you know, I mean, we just don't know. We wait to see what goes on there. And on Granovskaya, I know the noises are that she'll be around in some capacity, and maybe there is an argument that to have a transitional period where she knows the business and she can help the new owners. But long term, if you've sanctioned Roman Abramovich, and she is effectively, she's so closely associated with him, I'm not sure that sends out the right messages as a club if you're moving forward with that. Same with Bruce Buck, to be honest. I think there may be a point in the near future where the Chelsea just need to cut their losses on that front and make a proper break, and then go with the Bowley Clear Lake and see where the club goes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the sort of ceiling for a differently run club would be, because Chelsea fans are, you know, over the last two decades almost, they're used to being contenders, aren't they? And it might be that they might have to take, you know, one step back to get two steps forward. In that sense, you know, there's the same dilemma almost facing Spurs, isn't there, Rich? Because, you know, here's a club, for better or ill, that is run on very, very firm financial principles.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you can see Spurs as a club who are, you can see the progression is there in some sense. You know, you've got the new stadium, you know, off the pitch, things seem to be going okay. But as you say, there is that glass ceiling there. And don't get me wrong, Conte has come in he's done a great job. You know, and since he took over in November, only Liverpool, Manchester City have accumulated more points than them. So we're looking at it on face value, you can say that's fantastic. But then you look at a gap between the two, and in that period, there's, I think, still a 14-point gap there. So there's still a lot of work to be done. I think we did see some shades of that in January, and, you know, giving Conte a decent window to work at, you know, bringing in Bentancur, bringing in Kulusevski, you know, both have had, you know, a great impact. You know, we've seen the improvement of the fullbacks. You know, the likes of Matt Doherty seemed to be dead in the water, and that his resurgence before he got injured was great. Same as Sessegnon. So we've seen him improve players. You know, they're running more, intensity. Obviously, Kane and Son up front are just phenomenal as a pair. But there is that glass ceiling, though, and it's about how they crack. You know, the top two. Of course, you know, we've seen they took points of them both this season, and the main thing very difficult for them. But their issue will be consistency. You know, how will they turn themselves from being, okay, we've reached the Champions League now, but how will they go from being just a good side who can give teams trouble and problems to really forming that consistent challenge? Because I think, you know, it's like with Conte at the helm and the players that they've got, there's no reason why they can't at least challenge Chelsea for third or even push more. But it's getting that consistency, and I think that'll be an issue.
Mm. This qualification for the Champions League, Dom, it is, you know, the final confirmation, if it were needed, of the quality of Antonio Conte. You know, you've been around him quite a bit in his Chelsea days. Is the true measure of him as a coach just the way he improves players on the training ground? I'm thinking of their defence, the Tottenham defence, but also the flip side of that is that you've got to put up with a bit of sort of, you know, dilettante behaviour, haven't you? You know, yeah. This whole idea of, oh, yeah, I'll go back to the club in 4 or 5 days and tell them what I want to do.
Yeah, look, that comes with the territory, yeah. That's, you know what you're recruiting when you bring in Antonio Conte. He's the man that can transform Victor Moses into a title-winning right wing-back, but he's also the bloke who's going to pick a fight with your board and demand signing, some of which will be completely unrealistic. And, you know, we know what's going to happen this summer as well. There will be a meeting with Daniel Levy. I'd be amazed if that meeting goes well. It just won't, because the signings that Antonio Conte will want won't be the ones that Daniel Levy can provide. However, you'd like to think that with time, that Antonio Conte has learnt that a measure of compromise is needed when you're managing up at a football club. And that's got to be the big hope. That's got to be what Spurs fans cling to, because he's done a fantastic, fantastic job and reinvigorated a squad that was meandering. So they need him there. They need him bringing the best out of this group and what signings they can make this summer to challenge next year in a far tougher environment in the Champions League.
Mm. Where does all this leave Arsenal, Rich, do you think? Okay, fifth place. How difficult will it be for them to reach that next level?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be really frustrated, I think, Arsenal. Having been so close and been in those positions right until the end, I think it'll be quite frustrating, you know, when they look back in the season. But, I mean, look, credit to them. You know, they did start quite poorly, didn't they? And, you know, the young players have really galvanised the squad. And it's been great to see. And, you know, when I talk about United trying to maybe have, you know, build young players and get young players through and have the affinity between, you know, the club and the fans and the players, you know, I think we do see that at Arsenal. Although there was a disappointment there that it didn't make the Champions League, you know, the scenes at the end of the game against Everton, where, you know, there was huge applause, rapturous applause for what they've done this season. I think, you know, something that should be commended, but there are improvements needed. I think, you know, they need a striker, you know, a proper number nine who's going to put the ball away and hold the ball up. And they'll need another central midfielder just as backup. You know, Partey's been quite injury prone, although Xhaka's impressed this season. I think Elneny's on the verge of signing a new deal, which is good to see. And if they can keep their key players fit, I think that would be important. Because if you look at fullback, for example, you know, the likes of Tierney, the likes of Tomiyasu, you know, done well, but you can't keep them fit, especially Tierney. And I think if they want to progress that to that next level, I think they do need to look at a way of trying to keep their top players fit, because, you know, that kind of key triangle in terms of Ramsdale and the two centre-backs, White and Gabriel, have been fantastic. And I think most successes are built on having a consistency, especially in the starting 11. But as you say, they've really struggled to keep their key players fit. And I think if they are going to go to that next level, that's something that they're going to need to do. Whether they get a new left-back and right-back altogether, or they're able to work on their fitness and then keep them fit.
You mentioned, you know, Bukayo Saka there. Dom, you know, he's not even 21 yet he's played in every Premier League game for Arsenal this season. Was he a bit unfortunate to lose out to Phil Foden in the Premier League Young Player of the Year award?
Yeah, possibly. The Young Player of the Year award is a slight anomaly, really. You can play 2 or 3, even more years, 4 years at the in a Premier League team regularly and chalk up over 150 appearances in the top flight and still get nominated for it, which seems a bit strange. Okay, you're young, fine, but it should be sort of the breakthrough youngster, really, you know, bursting onto the scene. And I think Saka, particularly given what happened to him last summer and the recovery from that, probably does warrant a mention. I mean, look, Phil Foden is outstanding. He's an outstanding footballer. He's a candidate for the senior award. That's how good he is. And the drive and invention that he provided to Manchester City's Premier League success is undeniable. I mean, it's there for all to see. Saka has, in a lesser team, a team that is developing, has been an outstanding performer and talent. Odegaard as well, I should mention as well. I mean, he's been fantastic for them and has added to what Arsenal have got, added to their armoury. And he'll go from strength to strength. He's a regular with England. He'll be a mainstay of that Arsenal team for a long time to come, and the type of player that Mikel Arteta will want to build the constant evolution of that team around.
I'd love to see Saka get an extended rest this summer, because I think you meant, as you say, you know, as Dom said, the fallout from last summer and all the kind of emotional fallout as well, the physical. And that, you know, there were times this season where Saka did look jaded, you know, even at the Newcastle game when things were, you know, when things kind of fell apart. I mean, I think he just looked exhausted. And okay, England have got a few internationals coming up, and it would be good to see that dialogue maybe between Arsenal and England, just to say, look, you know, it's a young player. As you say, he's not even 21. He's played every game. You know, give him that extended rest, because we've seen time and time again of these young players getting pushed and pushed and pushed and then burning out. And it'll be such a shame to see a talent of the likes of Saka burning out when he gets to, you know, late 20s, early 30s, because he was pushed so much as a youngster, knowing, you know, how much he gives to the game already. So I think an extended rest this summer wouldn't go amiss. They can come back fresh in August and, you know, help Arsenal progress. And as you say, if England as well at the World Cup, you know, it'll be a key part of the squad. But a rest is needed. I'm not disappointed, because I guess England, of course, will want to win those games. But you'd like to see that dialogue at least being had for his, you know, duty of care, I guess.
Yeah, being completely honest, I can't see that happening. And, you know, we've got the England squads, I think, being announced later this week. Whether it's emotional burnout from a domestic season, I don't know.
Mike loves the Nations League. Look at him. Oh, you can tell the enthusiasm is dripping from him.
Frankly, I'll stay in and wash my hair that night. I just can't see it. You know, given all that, you know, we're talking about winners and losers on this edition, aren't we? Relegation. Dom, do you think any of the three relegated teams will get straight back up? I'm not so sure.
Quite possibly not. I mean, you can't tell. It's we have to remember sometimes that teams that look completely out of their depth in the Premier League are probably still caught between the two divisions in terms of the quality. So there is a chance if they're clever, if they're shrewd, if they make the right managerial appointments. Obviously, I think Watford are probably, well, we'll see on Watford. They've obviously made their choice, an inexperienced guy, but someone that suggests a slight change in direction in terms of what they want from a manager. Burnley, we wait to see. I understand that the time may have been right to get rid of Sean Dyche, but to do it without having a replacement lined up, that seems crazy to me. Even with the manager, the new caretaker manager bounce that Michael Jackson did instill. But the implications of relegation for them in terms of the nature of their takeover are quite serious on the face of it. So they're going to have to be very, very, very shrewd to be in proper contention next season. But it's not out of the question. I don't think the Championship is necessarily a particularly daunting prospect for teams that get relegated from the Premier League, even if they get relegated with 21 points or 22 points. I think that Watford and Norwich are used to that. They've done it in recent years. They've come straight back up. You'd like to think that a lot of their players would know how to achieve that. Burnley will be a bit of a culture shock, but they probably got the right type of scrappers in there that will give them a chance, if they can retain them and if there isn't a financial meltdown at the club. So there is a possibility, but Norwich and Watford, unfortunately, just haven't been up to it, and they haven't really added an awful lot to the Premier League this year, unfortunately. And I'd say that with regret. It's been painful to watch at times. I mean, who would have thought that after walloping Manchester United 4-1 that Watford would gain one more home point all season? I mean, it's astonishing. And Burnley just paid for a dreadful start. I mean, it just caught up with them at the end. Three wins in their first 20-odd games. It's dicing with death, and, you know, it's worked against them. And really difficult seasons for all three. And let's see what happens next.
Yeah, I do fear for Burnley. You know, they've been in the Premier League for six seasons. But then you had, you know, what is essentially, you know, a very welcoming, well-run community club taken over by US venture capitalists. Suddenly, from having 40-odd million in the bank, they're possibly, well, they're certainly facing the prospect of trying to repay £65 million next year as part of this takeover agreement. Surely, Rich, the Premier League should start looking at these type of leveraged buyouts, shouldn't they?
Yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. They should be. I mean, the details of it are absolutely staggering. And to leave a club, as you say, that was well run, that was sustainable, that was, you know, as you say, keeping themselves afloat in the Premier League, to then be, as you say, on this cliff edge, is astounding how, you know, these things are allowed to happen and to continue. And you do fear for them with that. As you say, how are they going to pay that back? I mean, as you say, they've got nine players out of contract this summer. I think Maxwell Cornet has a relegation clause in his contract where he can leave for £17.5 million. So is that what's going to happen? Is it going to be a clear out? Is there? I mean, of course, they're going to have the parachute payments, of course, but you know, our colleague Andy Jones wrote a really good piece in it, and you know, 95% of their money comes from TV revenue from Premier League. So when they lose that, I mean, you do fear the worst for them. I mean, look, they have got good characters around the squad and around the club, but it's going to take a hell of an effort, especially with no permanent manager yet instilled. It's going to be a really, really tough task to draw them back from that, I feel. And you're absolutely right. I mean, for the Premier League to sanction these kind of deals, considering what we know has gone on in the past and how these things keep happening, it is mind-boggling.
But when you put it like that, Rich, and I'm sitting here saying they've got a squad full of battlers that will get them back up, actually, they may not. I mean, a lot of these guys will presumably leave now. So actually, it is almost starting from scratch again, isn't it? That in itself is troubling. If you haven't got the finances to go out there and bring in the talent that's going to get you back up, then, well, there's only one way you can go, unfortunately. So it's very interesting to see how they cope with this and how those same American venture capitalists approach the future, because, you know, they need this club to get promoted to make sure they get their money back, basically.
It's interesting to find, isn't it, that you've got Vincent Kompany being linked with that club now. Okay, he's, I suppose, doing a form of apprenticeship in Belgium, a managerial apprenticeship, but that is it. It's uncertainty, and uncertainty is an absolute killer in football, isn't it, Rich?
No, it is. When we look at the likes of at the top, you've got City, Liverpool, okay, you know, backed well financially, but there's that certainty there. You know, there's that ethos, there's that drive within the club that everyone's putting in the right direction, in the same direction. Everybody knows what's happening. Everyone knows what's going on. Everybody knows, as you say, the direction they're going in. When you've got this uncertainty, it really, you know, it must take its toll on the players and the fans. So, you know, what is going to happen next? We see the, might be different now with Norwich because of everything going on behind the scenes. But in the past, when they have been that kind of yo-yo club, and even Fulham to an extent, you know that, you know, they're planning for the next season for their promotion charge, like likes of Bournemouth as well. But as you say, with the likes of Burnley, who are kind of left out in the cold, it really does leave that uncertainty where you're thinking that it's maybe not a foregone conclusion that they will come back up now. So you say, with all the players out of contract who are starting to leave as well, as Dom said, they will be starting from scratch. And for a club that's done so well and had that certainty and had that continuity under Sean Dyche and the kind of systems and ethos he had there, okay, of course, things ran stale, but they could have had an injection maybe of some new players or maybe some new backroom staff or something just to keep that going. But to say they're now on this cliff edge, and it's difficult to see where they'll go from here.
What about Leeds, Dom? They're almost the other side of the Premier League shiny coin, aren't they? They've managed to stay up. Jesse Marsh will presumably be given some more time. You know, he's had to put up with a lot in a short space of time. And there's talk there of big investment from America as well. Where do you see them?
Well, they need to invest. They've their squad was too small. The amount of quality was too thin. And they took a massive, massive risk by not adding significantly to the ranks in January. And that's, you know, Marcelo Bielsa can do no wrong with Leeds fans, and I understand that. But he wanted to work with a small squad. I think realistically now they need a bigger squad. So they need to invest in someone. They need to bring in more bodies. They need to up the quality. Be interesting to see what happens to Rafinha, whether he sticks about. I mean, the scenes yesterday at the Brentford Community Stadium when he's in the crowd at the end, quite
Did you
quite
see
remarkable.
That photograph? What a fantastic photograph, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
But he's sort of personified the quality and the sort of unpredictable nature of Leeds United. And he's on his day, he is one of the best players in the Premier League. But he's also there are also quiet matches and matches where he maybe doesn't impose himself quite as much as he should for someone of that pedigree. And that's Leeds all over. Leeds have provided in the last couple of years and seasons some absolutely spectacular games of football. They've not won them all, but they've been brilliant to watch, absolutely entrancing to watch. And you know, they certainly add to the Premier League. It's another northern powerhouse of a football club that needs to be in the division, and hopefully they get a level of investment that allows them to compete. I think there are a few people have still got the jury out on Jesse Marsh as well. I mean, it's been difficult for him, so maybe it's not the right time to judge. So let's see where we're at the end of the summer and the start of next season. But he'll want to make that team and squad his own as well. So best of luck to them. It was amazing scenes and a fantastic goal to win it and ease the nerves for stoppage time at the end.
Yeah, that was remarkable watching Rafinha walk the length of the pitch on his knees to give thanks for his salvation. Amazing. Everton, in true Yes Minister fashion, I suppose, are going to start a strategic review. Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, Rich? Don't change the coach so often. And by the way, just recruit decent players for a change.
You know that. That's what it is. I mean, sometimes you want to try and overcomplicate the stuff where, you know, football can be made as simple as that, really. And if they do, say that they've got the, you know, situations in place where they can progress and do well. But it really is as simple as that. And I think under Lampard now, of course, the jury was on him, wasn't it? But he's kept them up. He's built an ethos. He's dragged the club from down in, from the doldrums. I mean, under Benitez, they were really sinking. And of course, okay, 16th to 16th, we can all laugh at that, and it is true. But he has taken it from a place of low morale to kind of having that collective unity, and it's just about building on that now. I'm sure Lampard will have players that he wants in place, and as we talked about before, having that character. Having those characters within the squad who are going to help galvanise the team moving forward, because, you know, we've seen that, you know, the home form, the last six games, you know, four wins and a draw ultimately kept them up. So it's about building on that now. But as you say, strategic reviews is that, you know, just do the right thing, do it properly, you know.
Yeah, you know, talking of doing the right thing, I just hope this doesn't end, we'll end up in court. You know, the Leeds and Burnley wrote to the Premier League on May the 13th. Expressing concern that Everton enjoyed an unfair advantage, despite, you know, I think the 3-year losses were something in $370 million. I wouldn't be entirely surprised if Burnley officials struggle to get hold of their Leeds counterparts in the next couple of days. That's a bad thing for football, isn't it, Dom?
Yeah, it's never great when it threatens to go down the court route. The timing of it all in the week was predictable, I guess, when it comes out. But if there are underlying concerns amongst other Premier League clubs, I'd be interested to know whether it was just those two, or, you know, whether there are, those concerns were shared amongst other members of the Premier League, because it does seem that those, I think it was £170 million lost due to COVID, seems remarkably high compared to clubs of a similar size. But yes, I guess that's just another thing hanging over Everton for a while longer. I think it's probably unlikely that they get a points deduction, but I don't know. No one does. And if it goes to court, I suppose anything could happen. But yeah, a bit unsavoury. But it does show that you know, when clubs are desperate and scrabbling down there and they know the implications of going down, and they will do anything to save the skins. I mean, they want to be fighting on a level playing field, and clearly two of them don't feel as if they weren't.
Yeah, talking of playing fields, I just want to end, gents, you know, by looking...
Hey, my link's here, Mike. Come on, I'm taking credit for that one.
Hey, listen, mate, you cross a mile head, I'm in, okay? crowd invasions. You know, we had the latest unsavoury incident on Sunday afternoon with the Aston Villa goalkeeper, Robin Olsen, you know, being allegedly attacked by Manchester City fans. Where are we going with all this, Rich?
Well, we've seen multiple instances this week alone of, you know, fans attacking players and coming onto the pitch. And listen, I don't recall, pitch invasions have been here for many years. I don't recall the level of disorder that follows it, you know, in terms of, you know, attacking players and whatever. I think it points to a societal issue. I know we look at football in isolation, but I think we're kind of going down the road of, you know, just a basic lack of respect for people. Not to blame social media, because I know it can be done for good, but sometimes what social media does, when you have a voice and people can act how they act on there, they take it out into the real world. Sometimes people lose sight of the real world consequences of their actions. And you say we're going down a route here now of, you know, how is this going to be stopped? Because, you know, if you're a steward, you know, people blaming the stewards and whatever, if you're a steward, you know, earning however much you earn.
If I'm on minimum wage, I'm not getting in the way of those people coming on.
Exactly. In fact, I'll gladly escort them on myself, because I'm not looking to get hurt. So this is the issue here. You know, what needs to be done? Do we need to get, you know, do they need to be paid more? Do we need to get better reinforcements? Do the police need to provide more resources? Do the leagues and organisations need to provide harsher, sterner punishments? I say it is a massive shame, because I'm not a massive fan of pitch invasions, but I do love the spectacle that they bring. And why can't fans, you know, express their emotions in that way? But if we are going to keep seeing this, if you know, people don't know how to behave, then unfortunately this is going to be the way it is. And, you know, as a fan, do you want to be responsible for your side potentially being dock points and losing out on titles and things like that because you can't behave? But we know disorder football, is going up, big issue with, you know, with drug taking and alcohol and things like that. But as you say, I think you've seen a real steep curve in that. And I think it does link to society and people, as you say, just having a real disregard for respect.
Yeah, well, it's been a week of such strange contrasts. Unalloyed joy, outright stupidity, desperate cynicism and ridiculous drama. It's had its all. You know, a brilliant season? Yeah, sure. But its unforgettable climax reminded us not to ignore the innocent pleasures, powerful loyalties and private dreams that made us all fall in love with the game in the first place. There's still the Champions League final to come. Liverpool to complete the treble? Frankly, I hope so. But for now, thanks to Dom and to Richard for their insights. And thank you for listening to the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.